I accidentally spend $800 on whatnot.
And they don't tell you how easy it is to accidentally purchase something.
I hate how easy everything's becoming. I hate it. I hate DoorDash. I hate AI. I hate self-driving cars.
We are in a culture of immediate gratification. And every friction point between wanting something and having it has been systematically removed in a lot of our culture.
I don't know quite how to explain this, but I feel like our obsession with convenience is destroying our sense of community.
One by one, the rituals that tied us all together, you know, they got swapped out for something smoother and faster and easier.
A company representative may need to peer into your house via Neo's camera eyes to get things done.
You have to be okay with this for the product to be useful.
Not only does AI make it so that you're not learning those skills, it's also making you unlearn those skills.
There is a difference between reading and knowing how to read. And I think we lost the plot on the second one.
The writing is so tiny. Second of all, why are the pages so filled with so many words?
Life was not meant to be this easy.
There's an undeniable magic to the effortlessness of everyday life. Like when you're logging into a website and the verification code that gets texted to your phone automatically pops up on the keyboard. That's the kind of thing that makes you think, wow, we're really living in the future. But that is just one example of the seamlessness of modern life contributing to a larger central cultural goal, the pursuit of convenience. From early humans discovering and controlling fire to today's AI assistants, we've always been driven by the same instinct to make life easier, faster, and more efficient. And this has resulted in the modern world being nothing short of astounding, as everything is designed for comfort and ease. So much so that every hiccup, delay, or speed bump is now seen as a flaw to be eliminated and replaced with shortcuts, automation, and endless streamlining. That's why groceries arrive at your doorstep, meals arrive with a tap, and even cars are driving themselves. But despite these advances, we can't help but notice that convenience culture has left us feeling less at ease as we become more dependent, passive, and even numb. Because the truth is, the convenience economy was never built to make us healthier or happier, rather to make us compliant, consuming, and disconnected. So today we're going to explore the dark side of convenience, a world that promised to make our lives easier, but is quietly stripping away everything that makes us human. So first off, it shouldn't be a surprise to anyone that we crave convenience. It's basically written in our biological code. Evolutionary, it made sense that we would want to do things the more efficient and simple way, because energy output could be the difference between life and death. But even though time has passed and our circumstances have changed, our instincts have not. Over the centuries, this innate drive that was originally key to human survival continued to drive innovation past the point of energy conservation and towards just general convenience. From our method of transportation, our food chain, education, socialization, and now we even have AI taking us over the edge of ultimate convenience. But the underlying problem here is that improving efficiency in our lives doesn't necessarily mean that our lives have gotten any better. I mean, look at the difference between technological advancements of your grandparents' era versus ours. For them, it was definitely helpful that they didn't have to hand wash clothes anymore with the invention of the washing machine. But for us, do smart washing machines really count as a net positive impact on our lives? And you may be thinking, okay, but I would still rather have my conveniences because the downsides don't really affect me. And that is a valid and very common mindset, because as much as we like to say that we don't support the exploitation in the Congo copper mines, we still rush to buy the latest smartphone, endlessly chasing sleeker, faster, and newer. But beyond turning a blind eye to the horrors of the system we rely on, a lot of these conveniences are harming us on a personal level, whether we see it right away or not. Because in a lot of ways, we've convenienced too close to the sun. And these conveniences are actually making our life less convenient, funny enough.
And that took 5 minutes.
Beyond the invention of trains, dishwashers, and computers, technology in its current age has plateaued as it's less focused on liberating us and more on keeping us engaged. See my video, The Future is Here and It Sucks, for more on that. But we've reached a stage of hyper-convenience where, while we may be getting more dopamine from these advancements, they also make our lives more difficult. And I think the change here happened when innovation switched to simply indulging our laziness. But choosing the path less obstructed isn't always the best option.
Let me hold your hand when I say this. You have traded resilience for convenience. You can't finish what you start or focus or wait for the payoff. The moment something gets hard, we quit. We scroll. We take a break.
As Alex Kermy lays it out, using a dating app to avoid the awkwardness of flirting only weakens your social skills over time. Continually choosing the convenient path lessens your ability to deal with unavoidable difficulties. And from an evolutionary perspective, some measure of discomfort is just as crucial to our survival as rest and relaxation. Our ancestors didn't survive purely by being lazy, but through a combination of playing it safe and taking judicious risks. For example, pushing through the pain and effort of leaving a familiar home in order to reap the rewards of a place closer to sources of food and better protected from the elements.
I think we're struggling more in this day and age because we live in such a frictionless society. We have dating apps where you can just swipe left and right to find people and just move on to the next. We have like grocery delivery. We have just all these things that are placing us in a world of convenience and frictionless.
And so it feels like we've leaned too far into the convenience aspect without balancing it out by doing the hard things as well in order to make progress. And that is how we've arrived at hyperconvenience. Unlike practical convenience, which once made our lives more efficient, this new form strips away the very parts of the human experience that make life feel meaningful. Because making things more comfortable doesn't necessarily mean that life is more full or that you've reached your potential. Certain things are supposed to be hard, and that's more beneficial to us than just offloading our plate. Look no further than exercise. Obviously, you need to put in the work to get the benefit, and if you make it too easy, then you get nothing out of it. The impact of this is that the easier we make our life, the more our capacity to do hard things goes down. And we can see this pretty much anywhere. Last year, we bought a new car that has a backup camera, and you better believe that I rely on that thing with my life, as if I haven't been driving without one for my entire licensed life. And that is only one small example of the many advancements that are stripping away our skills and endurance. I wouldn't be surprised if the next generation learning to drive doesn't know how to parallel park, because cars are doing that for us now too. And so we are barreling towards a life not much different than the people of WALL-E, where our lifestyles expect less and less from us, causing us to become too familiar with an effortless reality. Our gadgets and services have removed friction from daily life, but in doing so, they also quietly stripped away many of the experiences, skills, and connections that give life meaning. Convenience promised more freedom and happiness. Instead, many of us feel emptier and more restless than before. But that's not to say that all conveniences are bad, because the truth is we live in a world that runs off of deadlines, so unless we change that, we do have to streamline some things if we want to fit them in, like my skincare. And that brings us to today's sponsor, Foreo. You guys know that I am in my 30s as of this year, and so I've finally decided to start taking care of my skin. But as a mom, I don't have a ton of time to indulge in a skincare routine. However, one thing that has been working really well for me over the past month has been the FAQ 202 by Foreo, a new generation of silicone face masks. What I love about red light therapy is that it's low effort with high reward. Their third-party clinical trials even show a 32% decrease in wrinkles in just 2 weeks of use. So we're not messing around here. But the reason why the FAQ 202 works so well for me is because of how easy I can integrate it into my life. It takes nearly no time or effort to use it, as I just put it on with a clean face in the morning when I start my work day and before I've done my skincare routine. Then I just let it run for 15 minutes while I'm working, and it automatically turns off when the time is up. It's really a win-win when I can see my skin getting brighter and softer with nearly no time sink involved. It also includes more than red light therapy though, as there are 8 different wavelengths, including NIR, to tackle signs of aging and other skin conditions. To use it, you just press the button at the top and then it turns off automatically after the 15 minutes is up. You can also access other settings and pre-programmed treatments on their app. So if you would like to check out Foreo's Black Friday deals, click the link in the description. And don't forget to use my code ASHLEY35 for an additional 35% off almost all of their products, even the ones that are already on sale. That means that you can get up to 50% off Foreo products. If you've been watching my channel for a while now, it will come as no surprise to you that we're pretty suspicious of the internet over here, and for good reason. The online world is a sketchy place these days, and digital safety has never been more important. Like, did you know that incognito mode on your webpage doesn't actually mean that you're browsing privately? Your internet provider, workplace, school, coffee shop, Wi-Fi, and even the websites you visit can still track everything you do online. That's where today's sponsor, CyberGhost VPN, comes in. It encrypts your your internet traffic and reroutes it through secure servers in over 100 countries, ensuring complete privacy and security. This means that no one can see what you're doing online, not hackers, not your ISP, not even cyber ghosts themselves, because they don't keep logs. It's one of the most trusted VPNs out there, with over 38 million users worldwide, including yours truly, and has a near-perfect rating on Trustpilot. All you have to do is turn on CyberGhost before you browse, and it encrypts and reroutes 100% of your traffic through their secure servers, so no one will have access to your online activity. My favorite part about CyberGhost is that it lets you unlock exclusive content from platforms like Netflix and Amazon Prime in other countries. And as a Canadian, with just a couple clicks, I can change my virtual location and connect to the US catalog, letting me watch shows that I otherwise wouldn't have access to. And with that, it works on all devices and allows up to 7 connections at once, so everyone in the family can join in. So if you're like me and you want peace and mind while browsing or streaming online, right now CyberGhost VPN is offering an 84% discount and 4 months free alongside a 45-day money-back guarantee. So basically, it's risk-free. Just use my link in the description and start protecting your digital life today. First thing to note is that the drive towards hyperconvenience isn't consumer-led. It's fueled by corporate interests exploiting our natural impulses. Because if we were left to our own devices, sure, we would continue to be drawn towards comfort, but not at the expense of our betterment. That's reserved only for the capitalist giants trying to exploit us. By creating problems that you didn't know you had, these companies convince you that the way you're living is bad, and they have the solution for you. And this is the drive behind pretty much any big company of the 2020s. They're all in the game of selling you convenience at the end of the day. It's even been given a very cute name of Big Convenience. Value is no longer sufficient to sway purchases. Convenience has become another differentiation factor, one that we believe will increasingly drive buying decisions and prompt brands to rethink their value propositions. To call out these companies specifically, we'll start with Amazon, that of course built its empire on making our lives more convenient. They do this primarily by offering 2-day free shipping, meaning that we don't ever have to leave our house. How convenient when you don't think about the annual fees and inflated prices that quietly include the cost of free shipping, not to mention the ripple effect on local shops, many of which are disappearing as Big Convenience swallows up their businesses. And of course, with more convenience comes more spending, because it's so easy to press purchase when you don't have to worry about shipping or even putting in your credit card information anymore. It's a win-win, right? Except as it turns out, offering free shipping, even if it's just a hidden cost, increases sales more than even offering discounted rates, meaning that it's just another way for these companies to manipulate us. According to new data from shipping technology firm Shippo, 62% of Americans refuse to buy something online without free shipping. In 2020, that number was 40%, evidence that our addiction to free shipping is only intensifying. Fast and free shipping options are the number one priority for shoppers now, even more than quality or the price of the product. And that is how Bezos has come to dominate the industry, by selling us crappy drop-shipped products that for the most part end up in a landfill, because it's just so easy to make the sale. And then we have DoorDash and Uber Eats, the epitome of convenience. No need to waste time cooking or cleaning up when you can just order your food. Their business model is entirely built on selling convenience by offering a seamless, quick delivery service. Since life itself has been hijacked by the grind of late-stage capitalism, we'll do anything to save time, even if that means signing up for these services that we know the food delivered to us isn't even good. With the decrease in restaurant food quality we've seen over the past years, we know when we place an order that we're gonna get the lowest quality, lukewarm, soggy meal sold to us at a premium, yet we still do it. It's crazy to know that I'm not actually gonna really enjoy a meal, but I'll still order it, because often that outweighs the effort required to make the food. And so I close my eyes and press order. There are so many problems with these food delivery services, like the fact that they aren't held accountable for missing food items or just wrong orders being delivered. They also underpay their drivers and overcharge for their food. And yet, in a society so starved for time that cooking feels like a luxury, we keep giving in. But it does go even deeper than that as well, as it's taking away a huge part of the human experience. For the entirety of humanity, food was central to our lives. The acquisition, the processing, and the consumption, all building blocks to the culture of our people. These actions were far from easy, but they were rich in cultural tradition and social bonding, therefore strongly tied to our identities. But now this has all been reduced down to the lowest cost, lowest time sink click of a button to order our food. Another big way that big convenience is continually siphoning money out of our pockets is by realizing that the less we think, the easier we are to persuade and the quicker they can make a sale. Instead of using their products to objectively improve our lives, they use it to automate our behaviors and keep us consuming, whether it's for our benefit or not. The name of the game is to make everything so frictionless that it becomes second nature.
Can you actually remember what you bought last week? I'm serious, take a second and try to think about everything you purchased in the last week. Most people cannot do that. That's because so much of our spending in today's society has become absolutely frictionless. 30 years ago, if you wanted to buy something, you would actually have to plan for it. You'd need to get in your car, drive somewhere, park, physically walk into a store, physically hand over money. And each of those steps, that is a point of friction, a place where you can like think and decide, do I actually need this purchase, right? Now, so much of our spending can be done in one click. 15 seconds, you have your credit card information saved in your computer, so it's just never been easier to buy things.
One-click purchases, suggested for you recommendations, auto-renewal subscriptions, they're all sold to us as time-saving, but what they're really doing is nudging us towards predictable and, most importantly, profitable behaviors. You don't need to explore, compare, or decide when the system decides for you. But what this is actually doing is numbing us and stripping down what makes us us. From the streaming services that tell us what movies to watch rather than it being based on our own taste, to Spotify algorithms auto-playing the next song before we can even object to it. We are losing parts of ourselves every time we sign up for convenience. And so every tiny hurdle that builds our person is removed, allowing us to just fall in line with the rest. To the point that instead of being independent thinkers, we are becoming passive responders. It's just easier to let apps decide for us when we're already so overwhelmed in today's world, and so we've fallen away from being the actors in our lives to often just puppets. The saddest part being that mundane tasks have been sold to us as a waste of time when they actually are just what life is made of. Life, for the most part, is just going from one mundane task to the next. And that may sound sad, but it isn't really. It's just what life is. It's not like every day is a highlight. Our day-to-day activities make up most of what our life consists of, and since most of life is just going through the motions, when you take that away, you don't really have much left.
I hate how easy everything's becoming. I hate it. I hate DoorDash. I hate AI. I hate self-driving cars. Fuck you, Waymo. Life was not meant to be this easy, and we argue that we're saving ourselves from all these mundane tasks so we have more time to socialize and create. You're actually sacrificing those things. Really, we're just freeing up time to consume, right? I need more time to watch TV and go to Target. Those mundane tasks are your life. Making yourself breakfast and going to the grocery store and driving your car and problem solving in your head without asking fucking AI. That's your life. That's the whole point of your fucking life. Like, what are you freeing up time for?
As Catherine Shannon put in her 2023 article, Everyone is Numbing Out, thanks to the internet and our insatiable consumerist culture, it is finally possible to distract yourself for every waking minute of your life and barely even notice you're doing it. When you mix all colors of paint together, you get black. Everything quickly becomes nothing. So we've talked about how big convenience has taken all this work off our hands, but we need to discuss what we're doing with all this newfound freedom. Are we spending more time with friends and family? Are we taking up new skills and hobbies? No, we are, for the most part, scrolling and isolating. And with that, I do bring some bad news. The loneliness epidemic is only getting worse. We first heard about this in 2023 when the US Surgeon General's advisory came out on the problem of loneliness, but despite all that hype, hype, it hasn't gotten any better. Because it's not just a lingering effect of COVID reshaping how we socialize, it's the convenience economy and the attention economy working in cahoots. These companies didn't free up our time just for us to wander around directionless and bored when they can fill that void for us. Of course, they would want to manipulate that free time into something that aligns with their agenda, which is maximizing shareholder value. And so what we've really given up with convenience is connection. Today, we have less and less reason to gather together when the original pushes for gathering has been offloaded to third parties. As we've already discussed, we don't gather to cook anymore. We don't go to restaurants anymore because it's too expensive. We don't even live in community anymore because people are inconvenient. We have created a culture of individualism where we've become so self-sufficient in all aspects of our lives. We don't rely on neighbors for a cup of sugar when you can just DoorDash them over. We don't ask our friends to share DVDs because we have the entire movie industry on our streaming platforms. All the small, everyday micro interactions that once filled our lives are slowly disappearing as we continue to isolate ourselves.
So a couple weeks after moving into our house, my neighbor says, "Hey, Levi, do you want to borrow my lawnmower?" And I say, "Well, that's great, man. Thanks so much." And I brought the lawnmower back to his house. The first thing that he asked me was, "So what kind of lawnmower are you looking to buy?" Implying that the lawnmower that I just borrowed from him was not really up for grabs again. All I could think about was the fact that every single one of our neighbors up and down this street has their own mower, and they're all being used like 10, 15 times a year at most. It would be so easy for us to all just share a collective mower, but that is not how the suburbs work.
If you think about someone who works behind a cash register, they will say that people aren't very nice to each other anymore. The pleasantries that we think are expendable, inefficient, meaningless, they actually grease the wheel of our social interaction in a way that makes us able to all get along, even with strangers in public space. And many of us are starting to develop habits of mind and behaviors that cultivate a preference for not being face-to-face in each other's presence. And that has serious long-term consequences for how we interact. Another big contributor of this isolation is that we socialize more over group chats than we do in person, because it's so much more convenient to just keep in contact through chats rather than having to organize gatherings. And with that, there are so many group chats these days that people are often too overwhelmed to even keep up with them. In a recent survey of roughly 1,000 Americans, 66% said that they felt overwhelmed by their group messages, and 42% said that group chats can feel like a part-time job.
The group chat should come with like a terms and services page. Like, before you enter, do you accept entering this vortex of hell? I love my family, but like, I can't wake up from a nap and be in the weeds. I'm barely hanging on today with the flu, and I wake up and it's just 57 unread messages from them, and it's got nothing to do with anything. How's everyone doing? Potato salad. Nieces and nephews. Dad sending memes like he's just firing them off because he just learned how to send them. Oh my God.
As said in this article, group chat culture is out of control. I love a group chat, but lately the sheer number of them competing for my attention has felt out of control. By the time I wake up, the notifications have already started rolling in. As I'm going to bed, they're still coming. In between, I try to keep up, but all it takes is one 30-minute meeting before I've somehow gotten 100 new messages, all of them consisting of LOL or right. I scroll up and up and up, trying to find where I left off, like I've lost my place in a book that keeps getting longer as I read. This is something I actually made a TikTok on the other week because I personally feel like group chats have gotten out of hand. Not that I don't want to converse with my friends on a daily basis, but if the majority of your conversations are digital, then you aren't really bonding with these people. Of course, this excludes situations where you literally can't see these people physically, but I think we should be reserving sharing life updates with our friends for face-to-face conversations that actually strengthen your relationship. Because these chats actually create a false sense of connection by offering the illusion of closeness through frequent but often superficial digital interactions. And the more you converse through these group chats, the less you have to connect over in person. As said here, although instant messengers have improved digital communication, research suggests that forming valuable friendships in real life has become increasingly challenging. Young people now socialize face-to-face less and spend a third of their leisure time online. This isn't to say that group chats are the problem, but when they're overused. Between email, text messaging, social media, and soon the metaverse, we can communicate with others without ever having to leave our homes. And offloading our relationships to group chats is just another layer in the slow digitization of community. But as we know, group chats aren't the only way we've handed over our relationships to tech companies. With the rise of parasocial relationships online, people are getting their fix of community without even knowing the person on the other side of the screen. And on top of that, AI personas are starting to replace real-life friends because they're easier. Recently, the company Friends has been under fire as they are literally trying to replace real people in your life. But despite the pushback it's gotten, it is utterly unsurprising as it's simply just the natural outcome of the direction we're heading.
Emily is my AI friend trapped inside my pendant. I think the closest relationship that I would describe talking to an AI like this to is honestly like God in a way.
Because the truth is, we hate the inconvenience of relationships. Caring for other people's needs, the time sinks, the conflicts, the disappointments, the betrayals. Who wants any of that? Well, as we've talked about before, a lot of Gen Z doesn't. The I don't owe anyone anything movement would naturally lead to a place where we find alternatives like AI, who won't break your heart, won't argue, always has your back, and is endlessly agreeable. Now, I'm not here to defend this company, but it makes sense with how our mindsets have changed on community. But the truth is that relationships are supposed to be inconvenient. Immensely inconvenient. That is literally the whole point.
I might get ate up in the comments for this, but you know what? Let's bring back doing things we don't want to do, especially for our loved ones. Because unfortunately, everybody wants a village, but nobody wants to be the village. Boundary culture, self-care culture, putting yourself first culture has gotten so extreme that we have lost all sense of community.
To have someone support you when you need it and to reciprocate. Someone to push back against you when they think you're making a bad decision or to talk some sense into you when you're being irrational. The inconvenience in relationships is what makes them beautiful and meaningful. To have someone support you through thick and thin, but also proves that they can weather the storm of life with you. It's a kind of bond that no AI can ever replicate. But could you imagine telling people 10 years ago what community would be diminished to today? A scroll-based bond between group chats, dating apps, social feeds, and algorithmic validation. It makes me wonder how much more relationships will continue to change in the following 10 years if we keep going down this path of over-optimizing our relationship. Because the convenience revolution is changing our relationships for the worse. When an entire society optimizes everything for minimum effort, it means that we turn into bad friends. But the impacts of big convenience don't end there, unfortunately. No, the last piece of ourselves that we are now offloading is our brains, all in the name of making our life more convenient, to the point where we're now facing the rise of anti-intellectualism. Now, first of all, I must say, while I was researching this section of the video, my first thought was, who am I to discuss intellectualism? Like, as someone who got C pluses in English in high school and is also dyslexic, I can't help but feel performative in all of this. But the point of this being to discuss the trend of cognitive ability rather than just pointing out that people aren't smart anymore. Anyways, I feel like I had to say that before I get into this. But with that, while I was on my journey of researching anti-intellectualism, I learned that approximately 54% of American adults read at or below the equivalent of a sixth grade level. And so the first thing I did with that information was, of course, take a seventh grade reading comprehension test. And because I know you're going to ask, I only got 80%. And I can come up with all the excuses why I didn't do better, but I feel like I've already embarrassed myself enough. The reason I include this, though, is that it really showed me how we've changed the way we consume information these days. Because when I read an article, I don't go into it trying to understand the reader's intent necessarily. I go into it to find the information I'm looking for. And I know I'm not the only one at this. As we know, most people don't take the time to read the entire article, rather just read the title and maybe skim a paragraph or two. And so there isn't even the opportunity to try and get the full picture of what's being told. But when we're not engaging with the full argument or perspective, we're training ourselves to consume content like data points. So it's no surprise that reading comprehension is going down when we aren't even using that skill anymore. The information economy has optimized so much for convenience that we only get our information in snippets, summaries, and sound bites. With infinite content streams curated to my tastes, it's tempting to only consume easy, bite-sized media. I've caught myself avoiding books that require deep reading or abandoning movies that start slow, habits I never had before the age of YouTube and endless feeds. It takes a deliberate effort now to push through that initial friction and give longer form art a chance. Since becoming aware of this drop in reading comprehension, I've also noticed that even the online articles now have highlighted the main points of the passage in anticipation of people skimming and just wanting the main point. How dystopian is that? Like, they're feeding us content like we're kindergartners. And we're watching this play out across multiple areas of life as the world keeps dumbing itself down to match our collective attention deficit. This was a recent hot topic discussion over on BookTok, where creators were complaining about how hard it is to find a good book these days because most of them coming out are so watered down that they aren't interesting to read.
As an avid reader, I realized that once authors started writing to us like we were stupid, that's when I stopped liking books. I've been on a reading slump this year, and most books that I've been reading, I've been rating them about 2 stars. I think a really big reason behind this is because authors no longer let us deduce anything in scenes, and they have to explicitly state every single meaning behind every single act. For example, there could be a scene between a boy and his father, and they will say something along the lines of, "The father yelled at the boy turned away." And instead of letting us infer what that means, the author now writes in a way that is so long-winded, it sounds something like this. "The father yelled at the boy because the father and the boy have a tumultuous relationship. And the boy turned away because he realized that his father does not love him and he was hurt by that." It is so terribly long, and I think that they do this because they think we're kind of stupid and we need to be shown everything that's happening in said scene.
That's not to say that there shouldn't be a spectrum of reading difficulties for all reading levels, but that the industry as a whole has simplified books to reduce reading comprehension requirements. And I don't have firsthand insights on this because I don't read nonfiction right now. I just don't have time for it. But it only makes sense as reading fiction books has increased in popularity that they would try to appeal to a wider audience. And if the standard of comprehension keeps going down, then the level of complexity in books would go down as well. And on the topic of TikTok, using your brain seems to be a dying skill over there in the comment sections, which we're seeing in this trend of whataboutism over there. If you haven't heard about whataboutism, it is a tendency to twist a conversation back onto oneself, erasing nuance in the process.
I love pancakes. They are so delicious.
Okay, well, what about waffles? So you're just hate waffles? What about the waffle community?
Wishing you health and happiness this season.
Oh my god, that is so insulting. What about the unhealthy and unhappy people? Do you ever think about that?
It functions as the opposite of critical thinking, warping information to fit a personal and ideological narrative. It's an extension of the reading comprehension crisis, where people no longer engage with the purpose of the content itself, but instead as a reflection of their own views and experiences. So this all originated from a viral TikTok recipe for a bean soup. Yes, bean soup. The reason it went viral is because a commenter asked, "Can I substitute beans with something else on a bean recipe?" And so what started as an innocent little food recipe exploded into a larger conversation about how people increasingly miss the point. Because clearly, if you want to make a bean soup without beans, you should be looking for a different recipe. This isn't for you. It also wouldn't be a conversation about convenience culture without mentioning the AI epidemic. The convenience of AI means that we don't have to write our own pieces of work anymore. We don't have to dig for answers or dissect problems yourself. We've discussed this before about how kids are struggling with their critical thinking skills as they're just offloading all their work to ChatGPT rather than going through the turmoil of solving problems themselves. But the thing is, this applies to all of us, and our cognitive abilities are like muscles that need regular use to stay strong. Just because you can doesn't mean you should, and forgive me for being concerned, knowing that the future doctors of the world are getting through medical school asking ChatGPT everything. People are using ChatGPT as a replacement for Google, asking it simple questions that they could easily find the answer to in 5 minutes. And I just think everyone is a bit too okay with having everything spoon-fed to them rather than putting any effort into anything. And I understand its convenience, and there are ways it can be used as a helpful tool, but I believe that a line has to be drawn somewhere, because at what point does it become too much? And so it seems that the lowest common denominator has become the standard. But when that denominator keeps dropping, we will continue to lower our critical thinking skills, reading comprehension, and problem-solving abilities, all in the name of making our lives more convenient. Okay, final thoughts. First of all, the most inconvenient thing happened while making this video. This is my second time filming it. And after I filmed it, I put my SD card on my laptop and my three-year-old hid that SD card somewhere in my house. And I spent too long looking for it. And here I am refilming it. And I just feel like that's kind of poetic, you know, that like I'm being confronted with inconvenience on a video about inconvenience. It's kind of beautiful. Not to say that when it first happened, I wasn't immensely frustrated, but anyways, I wanted to include that. But the other reason this is so fitting is because it's just another example of inconveniences becoming life memories. Like, what great content to use as a future mother of the groom speech, sharing how he lost my SD card. Maybe it's not that big of a deal, but right now it feels like a huge deal. Anyways, it's a memory now, and that's what matters. But the point of all this is that the danger of convenience is not that we make life too easy, but that we start to treat ease as the ultimate goal in every domain of our life, therefore missing out on life, whether it's good or bad. There are also clearly trade-offs with all the technological advancements we've talked about, and by reintroducing convenience into our lives, we can reclaim control, and in the end, the goal is to make life full, not just optimized. So maybe my wish for you this week is to slow down a little bit and do something the lesser convenient way, I guess, and just see how you feel about it. And go from there. But that is all I have for you today. Make sure you subscribe if you haven't and check out the merch. All the proceeds go to the SA Foundation. But yeah, that's all. Bye. Don't forget to click on the link in the description to get the special discount CyberGhost VPN is granting to our channel users. This application will protect your data while you browse and give you full access to all blocked content on the internet for $2.03 a month only. Totally risk-free, so check it out. Link in the description.
Hey, if you like books, maybe you should act like it and go read one instead of being on your phone all the damn time, huh? How about that? How does that sound?